that the University of Maryland is one of the 50 fittest colleges in America? Our state-of-the-art Epley Recreation Center, School of Public Health, Ritchie Coliseum, and Cole Fieldhouse have a number of resources that help keep Terps happy, active, and healthy. Join the daily group fitness workouts, request a personal trainer, or own your independence and build your own training plan. Exercise can improve muscle strength and boost your endurance and confidence. Feel better and live longer.
Ever wonder why you feel like a complete zombie when your alarm goes off after 8 hours, if you're even lucky enough to get that much sleep? As college students, it feels almost impossible for us to get enough sleep. We're constantly told to get 8 hours, but is that really the magic number? Did you know that throughout the night, your body cycles through periods of light sleep and very deep sleep? Most people's sleep cycles tend to last 90 minutes, so if you aim for 8 hours, your alarm is likely to go off just as you're diving into deeper sleep. Try aiming for 7.5 hours of sleep and see how you feel in the morning. If you feel great, you probably nailed it and found your sleep cycle. If you don't feel perfect just yet, test out an 85 or 95 minute sleep cycle instead. Not only will you feel great in the mornings once you discover your magic number, you'll also add about 30 minutes of valuable time to your day.
All right, welcome back, and you are listening to WMUC FM Radio here in College Park. I'm your host, Jack Wynn. You are listening to the second hour of a special extended episode of Winning Time, your favorite sports talk show here in the DMV area. We've got our regular Tuesday show. We've been extended from 12 to 2, and I'm very excited to get going. We're going to start off with a very fun sports event that happened this past weekend, which was a bit of a flag football tournament between a couple teams. There were four teams that played each other to go up against. It was Team USA, which was the flag football team that has won the championship for us. You know, there is a professional flag football league. This is the Team USA flag football team. They're not players that you would know. They're specific to flag football. And they're very confident in themselves. This is the team that we believe is going to be representing us in the Olympics in 2028 after the sport was added, which is very exciting as football continues to expand globally, I'm sure. We have seen the NFL hold games in Brazil and Mexico and Germany and England, plenty of spaces. They're trying to make it more global, and they seem to be succeeding, especially with this Olympics run. But Team USA took on three different teams. They played three games. They took on a team of non-NFL players, featuring people like Logan Paul and Ishow Speed. They took on a team led by Tom Brady. They took on and former NFL players. Luke Kuechly was out there. They took on a team of modern NFL players. You saw Joe Burrow, Jalen Hurts, Devonta Smith, Devonta Adams, those guys. And Team USA wrecked all of them. If you remember, there was a story last year, or 2 years ago, when they announced that flag football would be in the Olympics. Daryl Doucette, I may have messed up that name. I'll confirm it. Yes, Daryl Doucette, I was correct. Claimed that he would be a better choice than Patrick Mahomes. He said that he knows more about the sport than these NFL guys do, and everyone laughed at him. And I thought he was dead on the money. This is a different sport, guys. People act like just because it's the same kind of base means it's the same style of play. It's why you can't compare WNBA and NBA. You can't compare flag football and football. You can't compare, you know, regular golf to a scramble. They're different games. And for flag football players to show up so big and just kick butt, they beat the NFL teams by a score of 81-27 combined. They destroyed the other teams, and it was really cool to see. There are a couple highlights from that event that I feel like we need to discuss, but I wanted to shout out Team USA first. And the first thing is, I saw Tom Brady play football again, man. That was awesome. I miss seeing him out there. And he had one play where he avoided a defender on a sack, threw a laser to the back corner of the end zone, and he was fired up. makes you miss him. And you remember how much passion he has for the game of football, how smart he was, how competitive he was. You know he's still in there somewhere. And seeing him make throws like this, he does this a lot, by the way. He'll go to public events and he'll make incredible throws. We know he stays in shape. He's got the TB12 method. He's probably better than half the quarterbacks that these teams are going to roll out there next year. And I just wish he was still playing. He's great. I said this about LeBron James earlier in the show, that when you're truly great at something, you have to do it as much as you can. And even though Brady seemed like he left it all on the table in the moment, I do think he's still got more in him. Odell Beckham Jr. had an incredible one-handed catch in the corner of the end zone for a touchdown, and then said that he would, quote, love to come back and return and play with the Giants. He likes Jackson Dart. He likes John Harbaugh. They have a good relationship after he played in Baltimore for a couple of years. And as a Giants fan, I would be thrilled. You have no idea what things I would give to see Odell play one more game in a Giants uniform. He was my childhood. He was the reason that I love football so much. After starting to get into it when I was like 8 to 10 years old, Odell was drafted and just completely changed my view of sports from an entertainment factor. I would love to see him come home, especially for a team, by the way, that desperately needs receiver help. After letting Wandale Robinson go, Malik Nabers is our only real reliable receiver. Granted, we just signed guys like Darnell Mooney and Calvin Austin, who are high-ceiling, low-floor guys. Bringing in Odell as a veteran presence, as a leader, and as a fourth receiver who can really bank on, I think would be really great. He's probably better than Calvin Austin right now. He might be better than Darnell Mooney. Either way, get him back in that Giants uniform, get him back in 13. I just want to see it one more time, man. Next, Jalen Hurts had a terrible performance. And this one kind of links to my next bit, which was about Logan Paul. Hurts had one really nice deep ball to Devontae Smith after he hit a double move, but he got sacked by Logan Paul. He threw a pick six. He threw another interception. Just really rough out there for Jalen Hurts. Logan Paul went on a podcast afterwards and said that if Jalen gets traded, you know, he apologizes because it'll be because of him. How does it feel being one of the highest paid NFL players in the league, a Super Bowl MVP, getting your flag pulled by Logan Paul, man? Seriously? Throwing a pick six to non-NFL players? Seriously? Just really embarrassing stuff. We know that the passing game itself isn't Jalen's strength. He's a leader. He's a runner. He's a physical guy. He's a motivator. That all doesn't really play in flag football. But just seeing him get wiped like that was very discouraging. And lastly, the last bit that I wanted to focus on was iShow Speed. If you're not familiar with who this guy is, he's a YouTube personality. He is a very fun individual. He travels from town to town, from country to country, competing, doing a wide range of things. He used to do streaming. He's like jumped over multiple cars. He raced against Usain Bolt. He's just a fascinating individual. He's incredibly athletic. And he really held his own there for a little bit during that game. Granted, I mentioned Jalen Hurts had one nice deep ball to Devontae Smith. Speed was guarding him on that and got burnt. Although he was running with Smitty, but he just couldn't make the play. He had a couple of really nice knockouts. Just a really cool athlete. And it's fun to see, you know, more normal people competing against the NFL guys. Everyone assumes that the NFL players are untouchable. Flag football is a different sport. Athleticism, creativity, and quickness are valued a lot more than the physical play of the NFL. It requires different body types. And seeing these guys play made me very excited to see flag football in the Olympics in 2028, because the way that Team USA runs, man, they would throw a pass to Devontae Adams. He would turn it upfield, get his flag pulled. Fine. Team USA is throwing a pass. They're dropping their hips as close to the ground as they can. They're sliding their feet like baseball players without letting their knee touch the ground. They're jerking their hips forwards, trying to avoid flag pulls from behind them. They are running differently than the NFL players do. They move literally differently. They see the game in a different way. And it's so fascinating. I played flag football for a while, but I coached flag football for multiple years. And it's very much about cohesiveness and being able to play together and knowing what the heck you're doing. And Team USA has all of that. They've played together for a while. They're really good together. They know what they like to do. They know the strategy of flag. And they embarrassed these NFL guys. They flatly embarrassed them. And they're starting to, I think, really earn their respect across America, because these guys were getting, their name was getting trashed. They were being made fun of for their claims to being the team in 2028. But this is a team that we're going to get to know better. Darryl Doucette being the face of it as the quarterback. And I would like to see how they continue to play. All right. We are going to start talking about the NBA once again. We're going to slide back over on this end, because there are three players who have really taken their games to another level this season, and they all deserve credit for very different reasons. We're going to start solemn, and we are going to work our way up to more and more impressive and happier notes, because I don't want to end on a sad note. Starting with Cade Cunningham, who, when people were worried if, you know, the big four were going to miss the 65-game rule, Cade was a favorite for the MVP for a minute. He has been exceptional this year. He was averaging 25 points a game, 10 assists, 6 rebounds, you know, 2 steals and blocks combined. A really good player for a Pistons team that has really elevated. After being drafted number one, he has finally come into age as a player that could be the face of a franchise and a superstar in this league, could be a first-team All-NBA guy or in MVP conversations. Unfortunately, his lung seems to have collapsed a few nights ago. A very scary and shocking injury update. And you just have to hope that he's okay. This is a setback for him, especially as the regular season continues to come to a close and the playoffs come around. You need your guys to be healthy and ready to go. This is not necessarily a physical injury that will be lingering, but it is going to hold him out for about 2 weeks. They're going to look at the diagnoses. It was his left lung, I believe they're saying. It's really scary stuff. You hope he's okay. When you see players have real life injuries in sports, it reminds you that these people are mortal. These people are human. These are human beings who have spent their lives working on sports, dedicating their career to a profession, and putting their body on the line for it. Chris Bosh had to retire because of blood clots. Wemby had a blood issue the other year. Bronny James suffered cardiac arrest on the basketball court. This is scary stuff. When you push your bodies to the extremes, you have to be so careful. And I pray for a fast recovery for Cade Cunningham. I hope that he's able to return okay. I hope he's able to play out what has been maybe the best year of basketball of his life. And it's just really heartbreaking. It really is. I love Cade so much, and I hate to hear about him going through this. And I hope that he's able to recover quickly and, you know, efficiently. Okay, we'll talk a little more optimistically now, and we'll move to Victor Wembanyama, who we're talking about him because he has just been on another level once again. He hit a game-winning shot against the Suns the other night to clinch a playoff spot. 34 points, 12 rebounds, 4 stocks in that game. A stock is a steal and block combined. Adding on to just a historic season, he has been a lethal force for the Spurs on both the offensive and defensive end, and he is becoming very quickly arguably the best player in the NBA. He's playing less than 30 minutes a game, by the way, 29 minutes, and he's averaging 24 points, 11 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 blocks, and a steal. Those numbers are unreal. And I've talked about this with Wemby, because it's so easy to focus on, there are three aspects of him that are so incredible. One is his body. The man is 7'6". He can move like a guard. He takes step back logo threes. He drives past you and dunks on three people. He'll pull up from a mid-range on a fadeaway shot. His offensive bag is so deep. and for someone so tall and so quick somehow. It's incredible. That's the first thing people think of when they hear Wemby. The second thing, well, the size and the athleticism, the first thing. The offensive ability, as I just mentioned, is the other. The last thing is the defense, which is, in my opinion, the most impressive. Victor Wemby, I was watching that game against the Heat last night, which he had a solid, very solid game, 26 points, 15 rebounds, 4 assists, 5 blocks. He has 10 blocks in the last two games. Second 5-block game in a row. His gravity on defense is unbelievable. He's like a black hole in the paint. I saw a dozen times a Heat player drive in, go up to take what would have been a fair but contested shot against anybody else, and get blocked. Or drive in for what could have been a good look, and then dribble back out simply because Wemby was roaming in the area, and it's not safe to put up a shot with him nearby. That creates a defensive presence that we have never seen in the NBA. We've seen some great paint defenders. We have seen some great physical players down low. Hakeem, Tim Duncan, Bill Russell way back in the day, Ben Wallace, amazing defenders. What Wemby is doing as a shot blocker and as a shot, the way he disencourages shots is incredibly unique, and it's what makes him one of the best players in the league today and arguably has a chance to be one of the greatest players of all time. The Spurs, by the way, in the 2 seed right now. The Western Conference is a battle. I'm very excited to see Wemby in the playoffs. I thought last year we would have gotten him to take the step up, but he had injury issues, as I mentioned. Some really fascinating possible matchups for the Spurs as the regular season comes to a close over this next couple weeks. But they're going to be getting one of the two play-in teams. There was some outside hope from extreme fans that the Lakers would steal the 2 seed, but that's obviously not going to happen. The Spurs have it locked up. And they're going to get one of the play-in teams, which is probably either going to be Phoenix, who they just beat, the Clippers, the Blazers, or the Warriors. And when I read those four teams, there's obviously one that stands out, and that's Golden State. And if you're OKC or you're San Antonio, he's been injured, but the idea is Stephen Curry coming into your building, that's not ideal. I would rather play the Trailblazers. I would rather play the Suns. I'd probably rather play the Clippers if not for the level Kawhi was playing at. But Curry and that fear that they will invoke in you is terrifying. You do not want to see them. And they're going to have a rough battle in the play-in because they're going to be coming up from the 10 seed. But for San Antonio, they can go on a real deep playoff run. They can compete with anybody. You do not want to run into Golden State that fast. We saw what they did to Houston last year. Other than the play-in teams, I think Houston can compete with the The Spurs can compete with the Lakers, the Nuggets, the Timberwolves. They've shown that they can beat the Thunder. There's no reason that they shouldn't be playing with absolute confidence come playoff time, especially when you have a player as talented as Wemby. Stephon Castle, by the way, having a great season as well. Okay, moving on now to the last great player that we feel we need to, you know, memorialize today, or not memorialize, honor today, and that's Luka Doncic. I mentioned there was some random hope that the Lakers would make a push for the 2 seed. It's, again, unrealistic and not going to happen, but if it had, it would have been because of the level that Luka is playing at, and my goodness, it feels like we're watching one of the best stretches in NBA history. It's like watching James Harden in 2019, or Stephen Curry in April of 2022, or Jimmy Butler in the bubble playoffs. The level that Luka is at is simply remarkable. His point totals for his last several games are unreal. He scored 100 points in 24 hours. 100 points in 24 hours. He has been an unstoppable force. And the way he has elevated this season compared to last season is truly remarkable. All the reports where he took offense to being traded to the Lakers last year, the reporting on him about his defense, about his ability to win, was horrifying, by the way. Completely misplaced, completely unfounded. No reason to trade a superstar of his caliber, and he rightfully took it personally. Since February 20th, Luka has had 8 or 9 30-point games. He's had 3 50-plus point games. He's had 4 40-plus point games, and he's had a 60-point game. He is playing at a level that we have not seen from him before. He's averaging on the season 34 points, 8 rebounds, 8 assists. He's played 60 games. This is an unbelievable level of play from him. Not to mention, when you look at some of the advanced analytics, you know, opponent points allowed, opponent field goal percentage, deflections, pressure rate, contest rate, I mean, Luka has been wildly improved. So for a Lakers team that is just now starting to figure it out after the All-Star break, they are dangerous. This is, by the way, exactly what I predicted would happen. Ish. I said I thought after the All-Star break, the Lakers would start to turn things around, would figure out their team, would figure out the right play styles. You have Luka and you have LeBron. The IQs are too high not to figure it out, not to mention J.J. Redick as well. LeBron has officially, by the way, embraced that third option role in his career, which is great. He knows which spots he needs to pick to lay it all out there. He's got some burst still. And when you let Austin Reeves be the second guy, and you let him and Luka go to work, and whenever they need support, you can go to LeBron James, that can really lead to some success here. Marcus Smart and DeAndre Ayton playing at a slightly higher level than they were before the All-Star break. This is what happens when you have a megastar like Luka on your team and playing at the level he's playing at. The rest of the team simply gets better. They play with more confidence. They make more of their open shots. They play better, more aggressive and physical defense. Those are things that lead to winning. And when your guy is playing like that, it helps. I mentioned that LeBron has embraced the third option role. He's always been a great leader. And as great as Luka is, and as capable as he is of leading a team, we saw him go on a finals run, LeBron is still the emotional leader. They were playing a back-to-back this week. They were going to sit all their guys against Miami. And LeBron signed up to play. And the rest of the guys on the Lakers were like, well, damn, if LeBron's playing, who are we to sit out? He's 41. He's in year 23. So instead of LeBron, Luka, Austin Reeves, everyone resting for the game, everybody played and they won. In the huddle, a couple games ago, it was getting late. It was close. The Lakers were fighting. J.J. Redick calls a timeout and says, guys, look, I know you're tired, but we have to keep playing. LeBron looks at them and says, I'm not tired. And Austin Reeves responds, yeah, I'm not tired either. Luka goes, yeah, I'm not tired. They're following LeBron's example. And when you pair the ultra talent that Luka has with the level that he's playing at going into these playoffs, with the leadership experience and now potential of LeBron and now potential of Austin Reeves, this is a Lakers team that has more than a puncher's chance. This is a team that is a real contender to win the title. And it would be, if Luka continues to play, doesn't have to be averaging 39 points per game for 2 weeks like he has been. If Luka can just play like playoff Luka and keep up this defensive intensity, he can have one of the greatest playoff runs we've seen. The potential for Luka is so high. The ceiling is so high that it's almost the stars. And as a fan who has watched Luka over the last 7 or 8 years start to break through, knock on the door year after year after year, get closer and closer, miss the playoffs, get in, losing the first round, get in, win, losing the conference title game or losing the conference finals, and then lose the NBA finals. I want to see him get through. I want to see him get one. I would like to see Luka win the MVP award, which he is all of a sudden making a real push for. I do think that's still going to go to Shea. But Luka's just having a great season. We had to shout him out. We had to talk about what it meant for him, for the Lakers, for the rest of this NBA season. So just some very exciting stuff. We're going to take a quick break now. When we return, we are going to move to a segment that I like to call high-speed headlines. I'll explain how it works more after this.
When might you be buzzed? When you suddenly love everything.
You guys, I love this song.
I love these nachos.
I love our kickball league. Ugh! I love this guy.
What's your name?
You know what I'd love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzzed warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
I love your car. Is this real leather?
Speech problems. Who's got them? If you're worried about that class presentation, come on down to the Oral Communication Center, or OCC for short. We offer support for students who need help with their communication and public speaking skills. We're based in the Skinner Building in room 2117 from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. But if you need a little help in the afternoon, we're in McKeldin Library room 2111 after 4 p.m. Go to umd.mywconline.net to schedule an appointment, but walk-ins are always welcome. See you there.
Are you a victim of the campus cough or other common symptoms of a cold or sore throat? The accredited University Health Center, located right across from the Stamp Union, can be of assistance. Make an online appointment at www.myuhc.umd.edu. You can receive primary care, reproductive health care, mental health care, dental health, immunization, and much more. What are you waiting for? Schedule your next appointment now.
I can ride my bike with no handlebars, no handlebars.
Sign up for the weekly bike rides every Tuesday around College Park. Don't have a bike? Just rent it from the campus bike shop. Spending time outdoors has great benefits. It raises your vitamin D levels, it improves concentration and focus, helps you recover from injury and stress, and it may even mean more smiles throughout the day. To get more information, log on to crs.umd/Maryland Adventure Program. Hashtag stay active.
I can tell you about Leif Erickson. I know all the words to De Colores, and I'm proud to be an American. Me and my friends are...
All right, welcome back in, welcome back in. If you're just tuning in, I'm Jack Wynn, your host. You're listening to Winning Time, your favorite sports talk show of the week on WMUC FM radio here in College Park. We've got about 30 minutes left of our special two-hour episode today. I hope you've been enjoying. We've covered a wide range of sports, a wide range of topics. It's been a big week in the world of sports. We've got a fun segment coming up here. But before we get to it, we're going to do a quick topic on the NFL draft. So there were a couple of headlines that were reported. Because after free agency and as the combine's wrapping up and we move into the pro day era, more and more mock drafts are starting to come out. More and more hot takes are starting to come out. And I just wanted to comment on anybody who's following sports news right now and following the media as the draft gets closer and closer. You have to be so careful with what you're believing. And when you read stories, you need to think to yourself, what makes sense? You know, what actually adds up? Because a lot of it is smokescreens. What these offices do is they say, all right, we know that we really need a wide receiver. So we're going to put out a ton of stories about how badly we want a running back. So all the other teams negotiating with us think we really want a running back, don't know how badly we need a receiver. It's all very smart. And they do this with trying to create trades in the draft, saying, oh, we're very interested in this prospect. If you want him, you're going to have to trade up with us or ahead of us and get teams to bite on bad decisions. Or you can say something like, oh, yeah, you know, we're only interested in this player, so you don't have to trade up, and then you take somebody completely different. It's all very strategic. It's a little Survivor, Game of Thrones-y. Like, you're trying to out-manipulate these teams, but it's fun. You definitely have to manipulate the media because these guys know that that once stories break, they're going to become widespread. And if it gets back to reporters, everybody's going to find out about it. So you've got teams and scouts giving reporters false information, intentionally giving them smoke screens, giving them true information that they're not allowed to report. It's all very complicated. And if you're a fan trying to focus and pay attention to it, you've really got to sift through a lot of stuff to stay up to date and be as accurate as you could. I'll give you a great example of this. A player that we're going to talk about in just a second, Jeremiah Love, was linked to the Giants for multiple weeks. There was a point where they were the betting favorites to draft him. All the reporting was, oh, are the Giants going to sign Kenneth Walker in free agency? Are the Giants going to do this or that? Everybody thought, oh, I guess the Giants are going after running backs, trying to, you know, reestablish this culture. Any Giants fan could tell you that there is no shot we are going running back. We've got Cam Scadaboo and Tyrone Tracy, who are both dynamic players, and they both complement each other very well. There's no need to put all that into a running back. But what happened? The Chiefs paid a lot for Kenneth Walker. All of a sudden, the Titans moved one of their running backs, and the Titans pick one spot ahead of the Giants. All of a sudden, the Titans start expressing more interest in Jeremiah Love, this running back, because of the smokescreens that the Giants are creating. So, Jeremiah Love was just mocked to the Washington Commanders at 7th overall. And we're going to use the skills that we just practiced. And we're going to use the skills that we just practiced and identify this one as yet another smokescreen. Think about it. What benefit does drafting a running back in the top 10 do for the Commanders? Nothing at all. This is a roster that is filled with holes. They have one reliable receiver right now. They've got a poorly constructed offensive line and defense. Their team is one of the oldest in the league last year. They are rebuilding, essentially. Granted, Jaden Daniels, their young quarterback, is exceptionally talented and a ceiling raiser. And when he's healthy, I believe can take them to a really high level. But a running back isn't going to do anything for them. They need foundational pieces. They should take one of these great defenders in this draft and start building out from there. I think that's clearly what they're going to do. I think the report that they're interested in a running back is silly, and I'm interested to see what they actually end up doing. I would go Reuben Bain or David Bailey, one of those edge rushers if I were them and they slip. I think you just need to start getting foundational pieces. Those guys can be the captains of a defense. They can be lead pass rushers on a good defense. Get one of those guys, figure out running back later. You've got Jaden Daniels. The running game's always going to be solid. Don't worry about the new toy when you still haven't eaten your vegetables. The next report had the Jets trading up for Ty Simpson from Alabama, the quarterback. And the thing about the Jets is, as easy as it may be frequently to identify smokescreens for teams, it's very hard with the Jets because they make poor decisions very frequently. Look, drafting a quarterback is a big deal. Trading up for a quarterback is a bigger deal. And there are a couple of reasons for it. One, either you don't think the quarterback is going to make it farther in the draft. Two, you're so sure that your quarterback is going to be good that you want to take them as quickly as possible. Or three, you want to get the fifth-year option. So some contract mumbo-jumbo for those of you guys who aren't aware. If you are a first-round draft pick in the NFL, if you're drafted in the NFL, for the most part, you get a four-year deal. Four-year rookie contract. Later picks, it may be less. For the most part, it's a four-year deal. If you're a first-round pick, you are also given a fifth-year option, meaning you can say, okay, we want this guy to play an extra year for us before we have to give them a lot of money. And you get that wiggle room. You get that added year of a great player on cheaper pay. You are rewarded for picking a great player in the first round. So, perfect example of this. I'm going to use another Giants analogy. Last year, the Giants were waiting on Jackson Dart. It did not seem like there were other teams that were going to pick him, but they trade up into the back end of the first round to draft Dart. Ravens did the same thing in 2018. They traded up for the 32nd pick in the draft, last pick of the first round, so they could take Lamar Jackson. And they did that because 4 years from now, they're going to get that extra year under the fifth-year option. It's really smart. So now how does this relate back to what we're saying with the Jets? If they are trading up for Tyler Simpson, it is probably going to be because of those reasons. Now, they're in a position where they have to decide. If you're going to trade up for a quarterback, you probably believe that's your franchise guy. And if you're right, you should take him at the second pick. If you believe that you're at the Jets, you haven't had a franchise quarterback since Joe Namath, pretty much. If you think you have your guy, take him. Don't let him slip away. However, I don't trust the Jets quarterback evaluations. I definitely don't trust their top three draft pick evaluations. I would just take the sure thing, the great defender. Don't worry about Ty Simpson. I don't think he's that caliber of a player. The only reason that he's being put in these conversations is because guys like Dante Moore backed out and returned to college. Otherwise, he would be a second or third round pick. But instead, he's now the second best quarterback in this draft. Don't reach for a quarterback. Next year's class is going to be so good. The Jets need to take time to rebuild. We've seen every few years the Jets take a first-round quarterback and hope that they're ready to go. Zach Wilson, Darnold, Geno. They're not ready. You need to build a roster, build a program, and then insert your franchise quarterback, and maybe you can start to compete. Until the Jets learn that lesson, they'll do things like trade up for Ty Simpson. Okay. Moving on to a segment that I call high-speed headlines. Even though the show is 2 hours today, even though we've talked about such a wide array of topics, there is still just so much news that we haven't been able to get to. So I have got 10 minutes and 10 topics. We're going to spend about a minute on each. We're going to try to get through all of it in this time. It's not going to be easy. You guys know me by now. I can talk quite a lot, but we're going to give you all we have. Starting off, our first topic, 10-minute timer, begins. Number one, Justin Fields traded to the Kansas City Chiefs. I really like this deal. First of all, I think Justin Fields working with Andy Reid is going to be really good for his career. And if you think about it from a Justin Fields perspective, we have seen guys go on this path. He's trying to follow the Sam Darnold path. Had a rough start, had a lot of potential and high expectations, couldn't make it with his original coach, spent a little time in other places, got a little more experience even though there were struggles, now trying to go study, learn under an offensive guru, and eventually make a return. I still have always believed in Justin Fields. The first article that I ever wrote as a journalist was why he should have been the second pick in that draft behind Trevor Lawrence. And I would love to see him turn things around. Granted, I think this will be a one-year stop for him. He'll be backing up Mahomes. He may even get a couple of shots to play for the Chiefs for the first couple of games to start the season as Mahomes recovers if he's not there yet. He's a way better option for Kansas City than Chris Oludokun. And I would love to see Fields use this as a stepping stone to go to better success. It gives the Chiefs a lot more, you know, wiggle room as well if Mahomes isn't 100% ready to go, because he is a viable backup. Next, the Oklahoma City Thunder announced that they won't go to the White House and visit Donald Trump. Good. Next, Cam Scadabu. I should have spent more time on that one. I just agree with the Thunder. Next, Cam Scadabu goes viral for a bad joke on his podcast where he was asked about CTE. Because he is obviously kind of the face of CTE in the NFL right now, other than maybe Antonio Brown. The kid headbutts for no reason. His celebration is headbutting his teammates. When he was a little kid, he put on his brother's football pads and ran headfirst into light posts just because he liked the contact. He has a wide open lane to the end zone, and he runs especially into a defender just to headbutt him. This is the face of CTE, guys. He obviously understands the dangers of it. He apologized for his comment. He also made a comment about asthma, making a joke about it, which was a little in poor taste. But, I mean, as a society, can we not recognize these jokes? I mean, it's not like he was being malicious. I'm glad he apologized. It shows that he's got good character and a good team around him, at least, even if he's going to be a little dumb, a little, you know, he's going to drink energy drinks out of his cleats on Twitch, which he does. He's a wild guy, man. I don't know. That's Camp Scadaboo for you. I'm glad he's on my team rather than he's running for me rather than at me, you know? by the way, I'm very excited to see Scat play this season. The Giants signed former Ravens fullback Patrick Ricard, which means when they line up for handoffs, they're going to have a 6'3", 300-pound blocker running with Scat. That's just going to be physical. Imagine being a defender, getting hit by Ricard, hit by Andrew Thomas, and hit by Cam Scadaboo. This Giants run game, man, I'm excited to see. Not to mention Jackson Dart on the RPOs. Whew. New York. Could be exciting. Greg Roman putting that running game together. I like it a lot. Next, Tommy DeVito elevated to the New England Patriots quarterback 2 spot after they cut Josh Dobbs. All the reports were that the Patriots wanted to trade Josh Dobbs. He had a bit of a Malik Willis-esque Cinderella run a couple of years ago where he played for a couple of different teams, was really good as a backup for a couple of different teams, but he's just kind of getting older now. I don't think people are really that interested. The market for him is not very high, especially when there are plenty of fine backup quarterbacks at this point. The floor for backup quarterbacks is getting a lot higher. So happy for Tommy DeVito. He had that run with the Giants that was super exciting. Won a couple games with them. Totally ruined our draft pick, but still really fun. The Italian Stallion, I called him. I'm happy for him in New England. I think his play style is, he's like I don't even want to say a poor man's Drake May. He's like a homeless man's Drake May. But I think that he's still a good player, and he's going to continue to develop. And the fact that New England is trusting him with this backup job means that he really wasn't just, you know, a couple games here or there and now his career is over. He might be able to establish a career as a backup. You give him a couple more opportunities to learn from good coaches, spend years under Josh McDaniels, learn from New England, get in that setting, that culture, learn the league. He's still like 23 years old, man. Who knows? He might have a real career ahead of him. Next, Alex Ovechkin officially hits 1,000 goals. Just a remarkable accomplishment for an all-time legendary player. He passed Gretzky recently, and he just continues to add on to this resume. 1,000 goals is so many and so impressive. He got his Stanley Cup. He's got tons of accolades. He's a future Hall of Famer, one of the greatest hockey players that we have ever seen. He is absolutely in that tier right below Gretzky with some of the other all-time legends. And it's really cool. He embodies that claim that I've echoed a few times now throughout this show, which is that when you're great or legendary at something, you need to do it as much as you can. Ovi is playing until he's old. He's not running out of as much steam as you might expect, but he's certainly not in his prime anymore, and he's still playing, he's still producing at a high level, and he's still stacking these all-time legendary accolades, and he absolutely deserves massive, massive credit for it. Next, MLB opening day starts today, and I've got one prediction for you. The Dodgers are going to three-peat. Sorry. I would love for one of the New York teams to come through somehow. I would love for somebody to upset the Dodgers, but we need to be honest about the state of baseball. This Dodgers team is unstoppable. They have 3 of the 10 best players in the league. They have probably 2 of the 5 best players in the league. Shohei Ohtani is unbelievable. I don't know how you stop them. They're so deep. They're so talented. Their pitching is so good. And now that Ohtani is going to be pitching again for, I think, most of the season rather than just towards the back end, that gives them even more of an advantage. So I don't know how anybody's going to stop the Dodgers. I think the Yankees are in a rough spot moving on for a quick second on baseball. I don't know how the Yankees are going to get over the hump because they were knocking on the door and they've just fallen off. Aaron Judge, great player. After the World Baseball Classic, it's clear he is not the kind of player who elevates in big moments. We learned that in the World Series last year. We've seen flashes throughout his career. He is just simply not a big moment player. Talking about that World Baseball Classic, coming up short once again, Venezuela beating us, which, I don't know, there's been a little bit of tension between the USA and Venezuela as of recent, but it's cool to see it play out on a baseball diamond. And for Venezuela to beat us like that, I mean, we were a team that underperformed. And we have been underperforming on the global stages as of recent. The basketball teams we've been putting out, we squeaked by a gold last year, but we've been underperforming. The FIBA Classics, the World Baseball Classics, the World Cup, the soccer tournaments. We've just, our athletes, I'm so glad we beat Canada in hockey and established ourselves there, because the rest of our athletes really need to get it together. We got to put our best guys out there, and they need to play like our best guys, because these are teams that are not playing like a team. They're playing like a collection of stars. And if we want to win as a country and win as USA, we need to do it. Next, Dan Hurley reportedly turned to his good friend Tom Izzo to discuss taking the Lakers job. This was interesting because I wasn't sure of how serious the reports were of the Lakers offering Hurley the job in the first place, because we knew they were interested in J.J. Redick and they ended up with him. Hurley obviously returned to UConn to try to continue his title run with the Huskies. It would have been interesting to see him in LA, but something I talked about when we discussed March Madness at the very top of the show was that the NBA and March college basketball are very different sports. And we've seen what J.J. Redick's been able to do. He knows the league. He's very smart. I'm not sure if Dan Hurley would be able to do what he's doing. All right, our last topic. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown continue to light the league up. They had multiple great games this week. We wanted to shout them out with our last headline. And Boston is a dangerous team. And with Cade being hurt, the Knicks being a little unstable as of recent, and not a lot of depth, Boston is in an incredible position to once again take control of the Eastern Conference. And if you're a fan of a team in the East, this is the last thing you want to see. There was a chance Tatum was going to miss the whole year. And now not only is he back, he's back and playing as well as he has the last few seasons. So I picked the Knicks to make the championship. I am still picking the Knicks to make the championship. But Boston scares the heck out of me. Hey, the Knicks beat Boston last year in the second round. It took a great effort and some great wins and comebacks. But they're a scary team. I'm excited to see how they play out the rest of the regular season together. Okay, we've got a little under 15 minutes here left in our show. We're going to take one last break. And when we return, we're talking about some players being reunited in the NFL. We're talking about a rule change that may be coming to the league. And we're ending off with some hot takes. All of that for you in our last 10 minutes right after this.
Ever wonder why you feel like a complete zombie when your alarm goes off after 8 hours, if you're even lucky enough to get that much sleep? As college students, it feels almost impossible for us to get enough sleep. We're constantly told to get 8 hours, but is that really the magic number? Did you know that throughout the night, your body cycles through periods of light sleep and very deep sleep? Most people's sleep cycles tend to last 90 minutes, so if you aim for 8 hours, your alarm is likely to go off just as you're diving into deeper sleep. Try aiming for 7.5 hours of sleep and see how you feel in the morning. If you feel great, you probably nailed it and found your sleep cycle. If you don't feel perfect just yet, test out an 85 or 95 minute sleep cycle instead. Not only will you feel great in the mornings once you discover your magic number, you'll also add about 30 minutes of valuable time to your day.
Psychiatric disorders are one of the leading causes of disability in young people around the world, and TERPs are no exception. 1 out of 3 TERPs will feel depressed at one point during the semester. You are not alone if you are feeling down. Here at Maryland, you can talk it out with fellow students who are going through the same problems in group therapy sessions, or even have a one-on-one therapy session with one of our many experienced therapists. The campus mental health center is open from 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday through Friday. If you or someone you know needs help, come visit a health center and be a healthier TERP.
All right, welcome back in. Oh, welcome back in. We've got about 10 minutes here left in our show. You're listening to Winning Time, your favorite sports talk show here in the DMV. We've had a 2-hour episode today. Excuse me. It's been very fun. We've talked about a wide-ranging list of topics, And we've still got 10 minutes here to go over some things for you. So the first thing we're going to get into is a couple of old friends and teammates maybe coming together, maybe reuniting here over the next few weeks. Starting off with a quote from new Steelers head coach Mike McCarthy, who has faced a lot of questions about their quarterback position, given that the options in Pittsburgh are very uncertain at the moment. And when asked about quarterback Aaron Rodgers, McCarthy said that he would love to reunite with him. I'm here to tell you I think he's lying. I don't think Mike McCarthy wants to reunite with Aaron Rodgers very much at all. I think Mike McCarthy wants to win games, and I think he's still salty about the way that it ended in Green Bay, because the two of them really did fall off towards the end there. There was some drama, which then led into the Matt LaFleur day, or the Mike LaFleur days, and McCarthy had to go running off to Dallas after Rodgers continuously came up short, by the way. Aaron Rodgers won the Super Bowl in 2010, had one of the greatest seasons of all time following it, but lost in the divisional round to Eli Manning's Giants. Since then, he has stacked up MVPs, he has stacked up statistics, awards, and highlights, but he has not been back to another Super Bowl. Not only that, but once he gets to the conference championship game, it's almost like he becomes a completely different player and falls off. It was unsure if you could really get to the highest level with him as your leader because he's kind of become a toxic locker room environment. He's disingenuous with the media. He creates drama. He likes to be the center of attention. None of these things are contributors to winning football. None of these things lead to success of a team. They lead to entertainment. But if you're Mike McCarthy, you're starting your third stop of your career as a head coach. He's not getting any younger, by the way. I don't think you want to tether your first season to a quarterback like that, who, by the way, would be 42, banged up, and still uncertain if he even wants to play football. The Steelers should take their medicine this year. Mike McCarthy is not going to get fired after one season. He's going to be able to play out a bunch of years with Pittsburgh. That's how the Rooneys work. That's how the Steelers have always worked. They've only had four head coaches in their franchise's history. They're not exactly cycling through guys. The Steelers need to reset, trade some of their best guys, TJ Watt, I'm sorry, Cam Hayward, some of the stars. They've already moved guys like Ramsey Minkah in the past. They need to move into a rebuilding era. And that needs to start with either drafting a young quarterback, taking a risk on a young free agent, building out the youth of the roster, kind of resetting things, the culture. Bringing in Aaron Rodgers is going to throw all that off. If you're trying to get young players to establish a culture, having Aaron Rodgers be their primary role model is not a good plan. Next, DeAndre Hopkins may be returning to Houston. Now, this one's more fun than exciting because Hopkins is not a widely impactful receiver anymore. You know, back in his prime, he was one of the best receivers in the league. He had some of the best hands of all time. He was going multiple seasons in a row, hundreds of targets, no drops. Larry Fitzgerald-esque stuff. And I would love to see him back in Houston. For a similar reason, I'd love to see Odell back on the Giants. This was a beloved player, a beloved receiver, who makes incredible catches and fun plays, is a veteran leader, knows the game, and was traded earlier than they probably should have been. Hopkins probably should have played a little bit longer in Houston before he was moved. Odell should have played a little bit longer with the Giants before he was moved. So, I think it would be fun to see. All right, we've got about 5 minutes left in our show here. Something that I want to spend a little bit of time on is the Cleveland Browns proposed a rule to the NFL. They said, look, we know that we're allowed to trade draft picks up to 3 years in advance, which means right now teams could be trading picks through 2029. They are proposing to make that 5 years, a little closer to the NBA. And this is a terrible idea. I don't think that this rule should be passed. So in the NBA, you can trade draft picks I believe it's 6 or 7 years in advance. I didn't mean to say that to be funny. I'm being serious. But they also implement the Stipien rule, which states that you cannot trade your own draft pick in back-to-back seasons. So if you traded your draft pick away this year, you have to keep it next year. You can't trade another one until 2 years from now. And they do that to protect teams. Because what I want to talk about with this is the history of draft pick trading, especially with first-rounders. Because when you trade multiple first-round picks, it kneecaps a franchise. The Browns, giving up 3 firsts to trade for Deshaun Watson, kneecapped him. The Broncos, trading for Russell Wilson, set him back for 2 years until they had to rebuild with Sean Payton. Even the 49ers, trading multiple firsts for Trey Lance. Sure, they got lucky that Brock Purdy worked out, but those picks that they traded turned into guys like Jaylen Waddle or a trade for Bradley Chubb when he was still really good. And those are all things that the Niners really could have used. If you're a team trading away your first-round pick, a first-round pick is so immensely valuable. Getting a captain of your team, a franchise player, on that roster is huge. What reason could you have for trading picks 5 years in the future? I think it's going to screw teams up. I think that it's going to be way, way harder to organize. The teams that are really good at this stuff, like the best front offices, are going to be would thrive under this. Kansas City, Green Bay, Pittsburgh, even Philly. You know, the teams where the GMs really know what they're doing, Baltimore, would take advantage of this because they would understand how to scale the later picks with the current picks, and they would know what they could give up. The poorly run franchises, you know, the Giants, well, we'll see what John Harbaugh does for us, but the Browns, the Lions, the Cardinals, the Dolphins, those teams would be really screwed by this rule. And I get the Browns want to have some more leeway to be aggressive in making trades because they have such little resources all the time, especially after the Watson deal. I just don't think it's good for the league. I don't think it's healthy. I don't want to start having to restrict which picks can be traded within the five-year span. Just keep it at three, get better at managing your front office, and leave it at that. All right, we've got about 2.5 minutes left here. So what we're going to do is we're going to go through the Sweet 16, and I'm just going to pick every game from the bracket and see how we do when we come back. So Duke, St. John's. I am picking Duke. I think it's going to be a hard one. I think St. John's is going to fight with them. And I think Duke is probably going to fall off in the Elite Eight. But I do think they've got one more in them after a week's rest, after destroying TCU. And they played a close one against Siena, but they got their ground back a little bit. Still in the East, Michigan State. I'm picking them to beat UConn. I thought UConn could have lost to UCLA, but they obviously ended up beating UCLA pretty badly. I do think Michigan State's a strong team, a well-rounded team, and that they come through. Next, the South. Iowa versus Nebraska. I am picking Nebraska. I think they're a good team. Iowa's been a really fun team to watch as they come through. That game against Florida, as I mentioned earlier in the show, was very awesome to see. The game winner was a really fun highlight, and it showed that that team had resilience. I think their run's going to run out a bit. Nebraska's a very good team. They just had a great one against Vanderbilt. I'm also picking Houston over Illinois. I mentioned Houston's going to my Final Four. I think they're a great team. They've been great all season. They've got some holes, but I think that they're going to be a little more consistent than Illinois. Neither team has played a great game yet. They've both blown teams out. I think Houston gets the edge. In the West, Arizona. I think they beat Arkansas. I told you Arizona's my champion. I think Arkansas is a very good team. They had a thriller against High Point. They blew out Hawaii, but Arizona's just got such a high ceiling. They're so well-rounded, well-coached. Give me the Wildcats. I'm not going to lie. I don't know who to pick over for Texas or Purdue. I suppose I'll go Purdue because they've been so great all year, and Texas got their big upset, and they're on a really cool Cinderella run, but getting to the Elite Eight against a great team is hard. I'm cheering against Purdue, though. I've never been fond of that school from a Big Ten perspective. Lastly, the Midwest. Michigan, I'm going to take Michigan over Alabama. They're an awesome team. I've got them going to the Final Four. Alabama's good. Michigan's just better. And lastly, I'm going to take Tennessee over Iowa State. I thought Virginia would knock off Iowa State if they got there. Iowa State's very well-rounded, a very great team. They're going to give Tennessee a run for their money, but I think Jacoby Gillespie is going to be the best player on the floor. And I think it's going to be very close through the first half. Iowa State, I suppose, has the chance to pull away in the second, but I do think Tennessee's got guts, got resilience, and a couple of these high seeds need to start going down other than Florida. All right, that's our show. Thank you so much for tuning in.